We're in a passage of scripture today in Luke chapter 23, and I'm going to read from the Message Bible, and this is a passage of Jesus being crucified, and next to him are these two criminals, and of course, crucifixion is this painful thing where they nail you, your wrists, your hands to the cross and your feet, and it's a very, they strip you, it's very humiliating. And so, I don't know if you realize this, this just came up, but before people were crucified, the Romans would take the people being crucified through an orientation. And so they came up with top 10 thoughts to ignore while being crucified. And so, just, you know, to warn people about what's going to happen before they get crucified. All right, it's a joke, but here we go. So the top 10, number 10. Good thing I got a tetanus shot earlier this year. Number 9, top 10 thoughts to ignore while being crucified. I probably should have eaten those beans. Or maybe I shouldn't have eaten those beans, my last meal of beans. All right, I'll get my notes mixed up here. Okay. Number 8. Is this pine or oak? Number 7. The view is quite breathtaking from up here. Number 6. Look at all those people. I can't believe how popular I've become. Number 5. I'm sure glad I put a deodorant on this morning. Number 4. This is especially true since Chris is here. Did I pay my water bill? Might get shut up. All right. Number 3. I wonder if I'll get into any more trouble for peeing on a soldier. And number 2, I changed that one. I took that one off. Let me give you my new one. I should have voted against capital punishment. All right, that one wasn't funny, I realized. Let me skip it over. Number 1, I can't see my feet. I really need to lose some weight. All right. So, top 10 things, thoughts to ignore. I'm sure that'll have something to do with what we're talking about today, at least ignoring. So, Luke chapter 23, I'm reading from the Message Bible, and this is how the story goes. It says, when they got to a place called Skull Hill, they crucified him along with the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Jesus prayed, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they're doing. So dividing up his clothes, they threw dice for him, and the people stood there staring at Jesus, and the ringleaders made faces, taunting. He saved others? Let's see him save himself. The Messiah of God, ha! The Chosen, ha! I'm sure Calvin and Hobbes were there. The soldiers also came up and poked fun at him, making a game of it. They toasted him with sour wine. So you're king of the Jews. Save yourself. And printed over him was a sign. This is king of the Jews. And one of the criminals, hanging alongside, cursed him. Some Messiah you are. Save yourself. Save us. But the other one made him shut up. Have you no fear of God? You're getting the same as him. We deserve this, but not him. He did nothing to deserve this. And then he said, Jesus, remember me when you enter your kingdom. He said, don't worry. I will. Today you will join me in paradise. This is this moment, I think, in history, this death of Jesus, has set almost like these tremors throughout history that we're still feeling the effects of. And his resurrection, we're still feeling what this means. I find this whole scene kind of interesting because, you know, Jesus came and he talked about as he's walking this earth that he's going to come and that he's saving people. He came, he brought people, he healed people, he saved people, he raised people from the dead. Right? He talked about he's the Messiah, this chosen one of God. And here it is, he's about to be crucified, and some people find humor in this whole thing. So the religious leaders are making fun of him, making faces at him, and just joking that he can't save himself. The Romans are just having another, you know, great Friday night, we're just out, you know, having fun with the boys and killing someone. You know, this is typical for them, I guess. And so they're just having fun. Anything else to add to the fun? Let's make fun of Jesus. But what's interesting about this whole passage is that there's one of these criminals that are next to Jesus, that he's acting just like the viewers are, right? He's not acting like a participant, like here I am. He's acting like the Romans and the religious leaders. He's sitting there making fun of Jesus too. And he's like, Jesus, like, yeah, save yourself. And he's making fun that Jesus is powerless to save himself. Which, it's kind of weird, like for me, like it's almost like when you go fishing and you have this bucket and you put a fish in there after you catch one and then you catch another one. And as you're putting the second one in, the first one says to the second fish, aren't you an idiot? How can you fall for a hook and a worm? Come on. I mean, don't you think you're a little out of place to say this? I mean, making fun of Jesus' power. I mean, it's sort of weird that here he is, he's making fun of Jesus. He's taunting him just like the soldiers. He's poking fun at him. He's tearing into him. And he's acting not like someone being crucified, but someone who's just watching and observing. Now this says something, I think, about this man, that I think there's something he's ignoring. There's something he's suppressing, he doesn't want to deal with. Every once in a while in my household, things just disappear. Now, I know the coincidence, the coincidence is that usually that happens after I clean the house. Like there's a pile of stuff and I always put piles together and I shove it in a corner if it's Jessica's and I throw all Jonah's stuff in his room. I mean, and so coincidence that things disappear after I'm done cleaning. And so Jessica comes along and she's looking for some stuff that's hers. And so she's like, Jacob, where are my papers? I need those. I need to go right now to the bank. I need to do this. And I'm like, I don't know. What makes you think it's me? And she's like, Jacob, you just cleaned the house. And so, like an innocent person would, I respond, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't tell you. No. It must have been someone. It must have been the kids or somebody else. What are you talking about? And she's like, Jacob, you cleaned the house. Where is this stuff? And so now, thinking back about this, for some reason, now I'm not admitting any guilt here, but for some reason, if I were to be guilty, I have a hard time admitting that. For some reason, I think I would have a hard time admitting it if that was true. That I am responsible for my wife losing her stuff and I'd have to find it. And so I have this plan. Since I have a hard time admitting that, I have a plan just to turn the situation. And so this is probably not something I should be teaching on a Sunday morning because I'm sure it ruins marriages. But, got an amen from my wife. We're in therapy. So I turn it, and I say, well, how do you know you didn't put it somewhere else? And she's like, what? Well, don't you remember the last time you had your keys and you thought I took them and they were really in your purse? Or how about the phone? You thought I put it somewhere, but you really just left it in the bathroom. Well, I mean, come on. And I go on from list after list, and I pour the guilt on her. And pretty soon, I don't know if she's just tired of dealing with me, or maybe she's like, well, maybe I really did lose it. And so she finally leaves me alone. And then I go, of course, and I, well, maybe she put it over here in the pile of stuff that I put away, and if I find it, I put it under the couch, and then, oh look, it's under the couch. Anyways, that's my plan. My whole plan is, if you look at my strategy, it's redirect. Like, put the guilt on her, take the attention off, focus off of me, then I don't have to worry about my guilt, and just put it all on her. Like, what a great husband this is, right? And so that's my plan. And so when I was accusing her of losing, I accuse her of forgetting, and it's all her attention is on her. Now, what we have here in this passage is I think that's something similar. When you insult someone, or you taunt them, or you start blaming and things like that, what happens is the focus and attention is off yourself, and you put it on somebody else. And what happens is you start tearing into people like the soldier did to Jesus. It's like you're pushing them down and throwing dirt on them, and you get to feel better about yourself because of all the dirt you just poured on someone else. It makes you feel just a little bit better. I don't know if you guys ever go online, and there's this blog called Postscripts. It's where people send in confessions online and postcards. And today I was looking through the postscripts, and this one postcard came up that someone mailed in a confession. It says, we celebrate other people's divorces because we outlasted one another one, right? And this is a confession. What are they saying? They celebrate that other people are down low so that they can feel better about themselves. And so when you insult someone, that's sort of the idea. It's a way of of grasping for life, a way of feeling, of having some power and feeling better about yourself. And so we have the soldier here. As he's being crucified, he's being humiliated. He's naked, he's being crucified, and he's grasping for life, trying to find some way to bring something better to the situation. He knows he's dying, he's humiliated, but he's just trying to make himself feel a little bit better. Right? He's trying to keep some power in his life. Submit. Now the other person, the other criminal, he's admitting, like, what are you doing? You can't do this. We're guilty. Right? There's this profound sense that he understands. He's not ignoring anything. He's dealing with who he is and what he's done. And he cannot artificially make himself feel better by pushing Jesus down, because he is truly looking in the eye of what, of him, in the mirror of what he's done. And so this soldier, the other criminal, it's like he's grasping for life, trying to feel a little bit better. Now you might say, well, what's the big deal? I mean, he's about to die, right? Can't you give him, let the guy have a little, let this death process be a little bit more enjoyable, right? What's the big deal, right? At least now he can die a little bit easier because he doesn't have that as much pain, which is a good point. If all it was a stake, is just an easy death. But I think there's something bigger going on. I think there's something deeper than just dying a fast death. When I was in high school, no, junior high, my teacher gave me this assignment. We had to write something about a potato. I can't remember what the assignment was, but it involved potato. And I didn't know how to spell potato. I was in a class about 10, and there, you know, of my peers, there were some cute girls there, and I'm like, I didn't know how to spell potato. So I whispered to one of my friends, I said, dude, how do you spell potato? And he says, what? You don't know how to spell potato? And so everybody in the room hears it. And I just sort of shriek, like, oh, great. Everyone's looking at me, and they don't know I can't spell potato. And great, none of these girls are going to ever like me because I'm stupid, which I then realized that it's not stupid that girls don't like. It's people who cry over not being able to spell potato. But another time, I was at youth in junior high, and someone said to me, so Jacob, you afraid of heights? And I'm like, no. Well, your zipper is. And everyone heard it. I'm like, oh, that's not fun. That's junior high humor. You guys have the humor of a junior high. Gosh. All right, anyways, everybody heard, and that was humiliating, right? It's that, if you had, now there are people here that have more painful, they could probably tell you more painful moments than this, but there's something painful about that when people look at you and there's something about you exposed, like you can't spell, or just something embarrassing. There's something painful, and it's something that you just want to run from. Right, you just want to get away from that, so you don't want to be, because it's so painful to hold in front of you. And it's something where you're just powerless. You just can't get away from it sometimes. I don't know if this is ever what you feel like. You ever feel that, how powerless? You ever feel like you're just drowning and you're in a situation, maybe like the soldier, where there's no hope, and you just see no way out. I oftentimes there are some things that trigger this for me. Like sometimes raising kids, I feel that way. Like I know as I have some control when they're younger, but as they get older, my influence just goes away. I know that. And so all of a sudden I'm like, how do I teach my kids not just obedience, but have the heart, have compassion, how to love people? How do I instill that in them? Right? And it just seems like this overwhelming task that there's no simple steps to do it, and it seems almost overwhelming, and I'm like, I'm helpless. Last year, after I had my surgery, I was had my appendix, it burst, and I was in the hospital for 14 days, and after that, I went through this depression, and it was a depressing thing, and something that threw me further into depression was during that time where you're resting and you can't do anything, all you have is your thoughts. And for me, I started looking at myself and I started evaluating, and sometimes in that moment, something came up about myself that I didn't like. It was uncomfortable to hold, right? It's uncomfortable to just sit there in front of me. As I look at myself and as a pastor, I saw that there's so many things that I'm lacking as a pastor, and especially in the area of leadership. And I look at the church and I see the areas where we need here some leadership qualities, and I look at myself, and I'm like, I'm empty in that area. I'm deficient. I'm on that negative side of that. And it was one of those things where I was just like, how can I even be a pastor? God, why would you call me here? I'm so lacking in these areas that these people that we need. And it was one of those things, it was just so painful that I just wanted, just like the criminal, just on the cross, I just wanted to push it aside and watch a movie, enter a movie, somehow just ignore it. But it was always there, and it was looming right there. And I felt drowning, I felt powerless, I feel like I'm in a pit and I can't get out. And I start to think about, well, how can I reverse this? How can I somehow find some solace? And there was no way I could understand to do it simply just being here. There's no way. And so what do? I watch movies so I can enter movies so I can forget about it. I read books just to get this so I don't have to think and deal with this. I'd go on the internet and read about sports, you know, the Lakers, and celebrate their victories because I need to feel better because I cannot handle this. You see, the story of this cross, the story of the criminal on the cross, is my story. Right? My story of being powerless, of helpless, and trying to run from it. Right, the story of the cross is the story of the man and the woman who are having relational issues. And every time they look at, they're like, our marriage is just falling, and there's too many problems. I don't know how we're going to fix it. Right, it's the story of someone who you're overcome with your finances. And you're like, I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. I don't know if there's any way out of this debt. And everywhere you look, it's like the money just keeps on going, and you don't have any hope for that. Right, the story of this criminal is the story of the family that has kids that are just tearing and breaking their heart apart as they make one decision after another, and the parents are like, there's nothing I can do, I'm powerless here. Right, the story of this criminal is a story about someone who experienced a friend or loved one dying, or almost experienced death, and there's this finality that becomes so real of death that it's like, I'm powerless when it comes. There's nothing I have control over. But the story of this cross, of this criminal, is a story. It's a story of guilt, of shame, of being so overcome with guilt. Looking at yourself and saying, I'm a horrible person. I've made choices, and I can't escape it. I've made one choice where it just haunts you, and it's this burden on your back, and you cannot, and it's too much to bear. The story of this cross is that, is being helpless, and there's no way out. There's no way out. My brother, let me stop this for a second. My brother used to be have roommates. He was married last week, and he used to have two roommates. One was his best friend, Ari, and the other was this guy named, I think it was his name, like, Sean or something, or I don't know, it was Dustin. And so Ari and Joseph, they had this great, they're great friends, but Dustin was one of those people that was just a little bit annoying when they have these conversations and they're just they tell the same stories over and over again, or they're just, it's just crazy, you know, it's just, you get tired of talking. I'm sure you guys don't know anybody like that. You just don't want to have conversations with these people. So one day Joseph and Ari were sitting down talking, and Sean comes in, and he sits down, and he wants to start talking to Joseph. And he's like, hey, Joseph. Blah, blah, and he starts going on and on. And so Joseph, my brother, starts going like this. And Sean keeps on talking, and Joseph just stays there. And Sean says, Joseph, you awake? Joseph, you awake? And finally, Joseph, you awake? And finally, Sean's like, all right, he gets up and he walks away. And the moment he walks away, my brother's like, all right, Ari, so anyways, as you were talking about. And Ari's like, I can't believe you just did that. Don't you feel guilty? Maybe he does, I don't know. Sometimes we wish we could just do that with our problems, right? We could just be like, and ignore, and just wait till our issues go away. But the problem is, it's like they always somehow resurface. It always reveals itself. Right? There are so many ways we try to run from things, we try to ignore it. For me, I like to watch movies, or enter TV shows, movies, something that will make me feel better. I grasp at life that way, or I read a book, or an audio book, or read sports, and, you know, go UCLA, not North Carolina. All right, anyways. And so, you know, I find some sort of life, and grasping for life in something else. Some people, they go and they drink, and beer after beer to make themselves feel better. Other people do drugs to get this euphoric feeling. Other people, it's like any addiction you have, whether it's knitting, or some people go shopping and they get this feeling. Is that guilt laugh? Okay, anyways. You know, right? We try, but the truth is, it's artificial way of feeling good, and it's temporary. On NBC, they had this, there's a show called ER, and I don't watch ER because I just can't stand blood and guts. Actually, we were at Arnold's Thursday, one of those days, and there's this fireman telling a story, he's just talking really loud, a fireman telling a story about how some guy that morning got an accident and his collarbone came out of his skin, and I was just like, okay, stop telling the story, I can't. So I don't watch ER, but there's this one scene from it that I believe is powerful. A cop who has cancer and he's dying, and he has some guilt over killing an innocent child. And so there's this chaplain there, and I just want to watch this conversation as it takes place. Maybe you saw it if you watched ER.
And this time, it took him 90 seconds to die. 7 months later, a police officer came forward. The bully was framed for the murder. Huh? He didn't do it.
You couldn't have known that.
God tried to stop me from killing an innocent man, and I ignored the sign. How can I even hope for forgiveness?
I think sometimes it's easier to feel guilty than forgiven.
Which means what?
That maybe your guilt over these deaths has become your reason for living. Maybe you need a new reason to go on.
I don't want to go on. Can't you see? I'm old. I have cancer. I've had enough. The only thing that is holding me back is that I am afraid. I'm afraid of what comes next.
And what do you think that is?
Oh, you tell me. Is atonement even possible? What does God want from me?
I think it's up to each one of us to interpret what God wants.
So people can do anything? They can rape, they can murder, they can steal all in the name of God, and it's okay?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Well, what are you saying? Because all I'm hearing is some new age, God is love, one size fits all crap.
Hey, Dr. Truman.
No, I don't have time for this now.
Greg, it's okay. I understand.
No, you don't understand. You don't understand. How could you possibly say that? Then you listen to me. I want a real chaplain who believes in a real God and a real hell.
I hear that you're frustrated, but you need to ask yourself.
No, I don't need to ask myself. I need answers. And all your questions and your uncertainty are only making things worse.
I know you're upset.
God, I need someone who will look me in the eye and tell me how to find forgiveness, because I am running out of time.
I'm trying to help.
Well, don't! Just get out! Get out! Get out!
every time I watch that, there's something powerful about that. I think this man for so long has had this guilt that he's been ignoring. And it's like, with the finality of death, he cannot ignore it anymore, what he's done. He needs some sort of forgiveness. And he recognizes what this woman's trying to offer is just another way of ignoring it. Using religion as a way to ignore this weight that's on him. He's like, no, I need something real. And there's this desperation, there's this pain that is standing. He can't ignore it anymore, and he cannot, and he has to face it, and he needs some sort of relief from the pain. He cannot ignore it anymore. In John chapter 12, verse 24, Jesus says this. He says, listen carefully. Unless a grain of wheat is buried in the ground, dead to the world, it is never any more than a grain of wheat. But if it's buried, it sprouts and reproduces itself many times over. In the same way, anyone who holds on to life just as it is destroys that life. But if you let go, reckless in your love, you'll have it forever. This is an interesting, holds on to life, you'll lose it, but if you let go, what does that mean? I'll tell you what it means for me. You see, as I was in my own pit, drowning, right? Drowning. Oh, you want the kitty? There. As I was drowning in my own, as I was like, there's no way out, I remember there came a point where I came to God and I said, God, what is going on here? What are you doing to me? Why? What's this mess? How can you bring me here? And I just gave it. God, I can't handle this. Right? For me to let go of my life is to stop grasping, stop trying to find some way to make myself feel better, stop trying to ignore it, and stop trying to create my own life. To let go is say, okay, God, this is in me. This is my mess. I'm giving up grasping on life. And I see no way out. I see no way of training me in these areas. I see no way. And you know what? Amazing thing happened for me as I let it go. And God, he started to work in ways that I didn't see he could do. Right? I ran into somebody in Pancheros who I knew, I've known for a while. And someone who has the specific, everything I thought, no way I could find here. Everything I thought before that I needed, this man has the ability to help me to provide, and his resources. It was incredible. And then the next thing I know, he would send other people, and he'd send a few things, conversations, and next thing you know, no longer do I feel like I was drowning in darkness. All of a sudden, there's this light, and there's this peace that Jesus is providing a way, a path out of this mess. Right, I worship Jesus, not just because he saved me from my sins, but because he keeps on saving me. Right, every time I find myself overwhelmed in a darkness, no way out, he keeps on coming through and providing something I couldn't see there ever before. But what it took for me is stop grasping onto life, stop trying to create my own life, stop trying to create my own happiness, stop trying to ignore it, and letting Jesus bring that to me. Letting go, saying, I'm letting go of this. But that's what the soldier did, the criminal. Remember, he said to Jesus, Jesus, remember me in your kingdom. This criminal had given up on how, trying to create artificial life, trying to do something to make himself. He gave up on that. He said, Jesus, I'm just trusting you. And that's all his prayer was. Remember me. It wasn't some fancy thing. It was just, Jesus, remember me. And Jesus says to him, remember, today, fine, we're going to be in paradise together. This man let go of his life, and he found it. Yeah, the other man, the other criminal, he died, right? He maybe had an easier death because he made himself feel a bit better, but that's it, right? He held on to life, and now he has nothing. But this man who let go, and he's faced, and he held what he had, and he looked at it, and he came to Jesus, he found life. One last story. I have a friend. His name is Jonathan Olson, and in high school, he went skiing and he broke both arms, and he was in cast, like his hands were like this. And so we'd be like, "Hey, Jonathan, how you doing?" And he'd be like, "Yeah, thanks, guys. How was the movie? Two thumbs up, two thumbs down." And he's like, "Come on, you guys. Like, come on, can you do it? Want a thumb war?" And anyways, Those junior, okay, my humor hasn't grown since junior high, but you like the fly, anyways. Now, he had these cast on for it had to be like a month. And at first, it was awkward doing things, but after a while, he began to do things with ease. He could even write somehow, he could open bottles, he could do some, I don't know how he could do some things, right? He just got used to these casts. But imagine what it was like after having cast on, and you get so used to it, it's almost like second nature. Then the day you go to the hospital and they cut it off, it's like, wow, I didn't realize how much my hands were restricted. I got so used to it. You see, the path of Jesus is the path he takes you is always inward and bringing out this junk in our life to deal with it. Why? Because we have these casts on and we get so used to it. Sometimes we keep on ignoring these things and it's just like having, you just get so used to it being there. And it's like you don't even have a problem. Jesus says, I have come that they, that you may have life and have it in its fullness. Right? A full life. And that sometimes we don't even know that our life is confined by these casts. Jesus died and he rose, and his resurrection gives us a new life, the ability of new life. Our story is a story of these two criminals on the cross, right? One criminal is just ignoring it and trying to deny the truth and holding on to life, and the other one is letting go and he's finding real life. This is our story. This is where we always find ourselves in. The question is, which one do you want to be?